our speakers have said, get involved, do it. And I have said that to a million students, I think. But we rarely talk about the risks and the rewards of doing that. So that is my story today. Value-based policy advocacy. What values am I talking about? Let me start with the mission and vision statement of my Quaker lobby group. Think of the values embedded here. We say and work for this. We seek a world free of war and the threat of war. We seek a world with equity and justice for all. We seek a world where every person's potential may be fulfilled. We seek an earth restored. You may also know this lobby group, the Friends Committee on National Legislation, through this poster. Have you seen this yard sign or this bumper sticker? We created this several years ago and actually hung it on the banner of our, hung it as a banner in our building about September 20th, 2001. I'm here with one of the senior colleagues from FCNL. And I'm going to talk more about FCNL, but let me just talk a little bit about how value-laden policy work is. Values drive all policy decisions. They are the compass that point us in a direction. They give us our internal and ethical standards. They function like a rudder to keep us on course. They are our vision of our preferred world. And as you think about all of the values that can make the fabric, that make the fabric of your life, you know they come from your personal views, your political ideology, your religious or spiritual values, your discipline, our discipline, your institution and society. And, you know, when you think about, you know, just to contrast two of these, when you think about the disciplinary values for me in nursing, the caring, the collaboration, the collectivity, the shared power, the community, it's not always in line with what I believe are some dominant societal values of competition, of individuality, of high-tech care, of profit. So there are, you know, there are ways in which there are tensions in the world. This is not easy to see, but I wanted to put this page from the Mason-Levitt Chafee book that shows that values provide the context, the outer circles of values and the inner circles, the policy formation. And so just briefly, I wanted to flash that up there to kind of drive home the point that values influence policy development and the politics around all of that. And then getting back to inevitable tension, when individuals and groups with disparate values enter into this policymaking process, consensus around policies can be difficult to attain unless the values are clarified and there's agreement is reached despite these differences. Although groups with markedly different values sometimes agree to the same solution, they may do so because the solution manages to reflect their value sets. So there just are differences and tensions between our preferred worlds, between the ways to achieve it, sometimes between our values and science, sometimes between our personal values and the institutional values and mission. Hopefully you don't stay there too long because I don't think that's healthy. And I think there are tensions between power differential, and that's one of the stories I'm going to tell will relate to that. I just wanted to say a couple things about the Friends Committee on National Legislation because that is the context for the three stories that I'm going to tell you. FCNL is called, on our website, the Quaker Lobby in the Public Interest. It's the Quaker witness on Capitol Hill. And sometimes we say it's our intent to bring spiritual values to bear on public policy. It is a nonpartisan group. And just to give you a visual, we have a modest, simple building that actually, as an aside, we've just renovated. And this is across the street from the Senate Hart Building. And it's a green building with a vegetated roof and all sorts of amazing, wonderful green features in it, which the folks on Capitol Hill are looking at. But I just wanted you to have a visual of our building. And then real briefly, we're the first registered faith-based lobby in the nation, which makes us the oldest faith-based lobby in the nation, formed in the turmoil of World War II around the issue of the draft and the war. And so throughout these years, we focused on translating Quaker values and testimonies into public policy. And I think it's really great that the last three on the list, I think it's a model for everyone to look at long-term consequences, root causes, and the interrelationship to issues. Just, I think, while we've been doing that, I think that's really a recipe for success for any group. And then real briefly, I've been involved for a long while with FCNL, have been on the committee since 1988, served on the policy committee for 6 years, served on the executive committee, and then our terminology for president or leader or whatever is clerk. So I was clerk and assistant clerk for 4 years. And I would summarize all that involvement by saying it's my favorite expression of both my faith and my public health nursing values. And just real briefly, I will just say while FCNL looks like my faith-based work, and it is, it's also an expression of my public health values. Because if you look at kind of a simplistic chart here, equality for us Quakers talk about affirming the divine potential in each person. Whereas in public health, we talk about the human dignity, the inherent worth, the uniqueness of each individual, respecting autonomy, and public health is very egalitarian. We have a sense of community in the Quakers, which certainly public health we do, with aggregate and focusing on healthy, healthful communities. Simplicity is a historic and current, although our definition of simplicity is kind of changing somewhat, to the simplicity of focus and clarity of focus. Which this might be a stretch, but I think of our focus in public health as well. Peace and social justice, that's very obvious. And our sense of integrity and truth, which public health does as well, and we want to be faithful to the facts. So I have three stories that I want to tell just really very briefly, reflect on them, and conclude with lessons learned from all of this. My first story is about communicating, and if you will, convincing my public institution that my involvement in FCNL was an okay thing to do. Picture an untenured assistant professor making choices about service in FCNL. Now, a wise mentor would have said to me, you know, take an office in APHA or do something like that, which would be so obvious. But I didn't do that. I just followed my heart and followed what I felt like was my opportunity to spend my unique life and my passion. So that's what I did. It provided a wonderful enrichment for my teaching, for my scholarship. It gave me stories, experiences, networks. But what I had to do was help my institution connect the dots. I had to help them understand that this really was public health nursing. It looked like faith-based work, but it was one and the same. I had to link it to public health nursing, to the values, to the mission. I used the classic article by Cohen et al. In 1996 on the stages of political development, because they talked about the fourth stage, where nursing is involved, not just only in nursing and health, but involved in interdisciplinary fields and working more in public policy. So I had to pull out both Cohen and the Fawcett and Russell framework as well to say, see, this is what I'm doing, and this is how I explain it right there. I would say that this is not an avenue for rising academic stars, because it took more effort and explanation than if I had chosen something more common, I guess. Secondly, I want to tell you a story about my application for the Robert Wood Johnson Health Policy Fellowship. This was a mid-career, well, it is a mid-career thing, and if you know about it, it's a three-year process, and the first year's in Washington. I applied, told 800 of my closest friends I wanted to do this, and worked really hard for it. Was a semifinalist. I was so pleased. I was actually fairly confident because I was one nurse out of 10 I thought, they need a nurse. So I just thought it was really... So I went to the interview, and it was a very intense day of interviews with three different panels of about 10 folks on the panel. I was not chosen, and it was very interesting, but I want to tell you a story that one of the questions asked me was, so I see here by your application that you have, that you work with the Friends. I see that you've managed some Democratic campaigns. When you go to interview on the Hill, don't you think you'll be perceived as too moral and too liberal? I wanted to laugh, but I didn't think that was the right thing to do. Because what is too moral and what is too liberal? And I came after the end and a lot of processing to realize that I must have come across as too ideological and not just this raw, unbiased scientist who wanted to work there on the Hill. I don't know. But it was just an amazing moment. And my learning is that the cost of going public with our values may not always be known to us. And my third and final story, I guest lecture a lot in policy in schools of nursing. It's really great fun for me. And it often goes really well. I think people get to see animation and passion and stories and what have you. Last year, I was very busy, was invited to do that, so without any preparation, just walked into the room and was remarkably animated and was telling stories in part from my FCNL experience. I went on to explain that war was one of the worst things we do for public health, that it was just a very dangerous and non-productive thing, and that it harmed infrastructure and human lives, and you know, on and on. So, I thought it was fine. The room looked okay. The next day, my secretary said to me, a student has made an appointment because you have drastically offended him. Well, I said, sure, let's talk to him. And it was a former military person who was continuing his education through ROTC. And he was really offended by my remarks. What I learned was something that I thought I did, but I think in my passion I forgot to provide the context to say, I know that at that time I was the associate dean, and there was this power differential. If I had said, this is just a personal story, I'm sharing these values and these examples not as what is right, but just a story from me, and so I'm not saying that I want you to replicate this. Because the student said to me, you're our associate dean, and you set these declarative statements. And actually they were offensive to me, and had you framed it around a personal story, then I wouldn't have been so good. And I really took that lesson to heart, because it was the most poignant way for me to learn that the power differential made it really very different. So lessons learned from all of this. I think that there's just a powerful synergy that can come when your values from every aspect of your life become integrated into one colorful tapestry. That, at least, has been my experience, and I love living that sort of experience. I think that we need to be intentional about the costs and benefits of what we do and how public we go with our values. I've learned that it takes time, and we should be very intentional about helping people connect the dots to understand the work that we do. And then finally, I've learned to celebrate the doors that open when people know what your values are. That mostly has been true for me in party politics, when some, for me, Democratic doors were open and some Republican doors and avenues were shut. And just to accept the ones that are closed, that's the way it is. Or at least that's how I've come to understand this. I think it's our obligation to mentor others on this journey about the risks and the rewards, rather than just say to people, get involved, do it. Because it's not that simple. And I think we should, I think they deserve the nuance. of what the experience is like. And I would conclude by saying, for me, daring to go public allowed a wholeness and an opportunity to live my passion and to feel what is, for me, an undivided soul.